there's this sort of dichotomy that gets created where it says we could either care about people or we could care about profits. And I find that the more you care about people, then the more processes and structures you put in place. Like, processes save us from the poverty of our intentions.
Hello, and welcome to Working with me, Dan Doriani, hosting a podcast where we explore faith, work, culture, and the way believers can make a difference in their corner of the world. Today's guests are Jeremy Biedenbaugh and Travis Vaughn. Both were effective pastors for over 15 years, yet today they are business leaders. They'll describe their love for Jesus, the church, the pastorate, and their midlife call to business. They just met in this podcast, but I think you'll agree they have a great chemistry. Today, my guests are two people I find absolutely fascinating, interesting, gifted, funny, intelligent, accomplished men. One is named Travis Vaughn. The other is named Jeremy Biedenbaugh. They just met each other 15 minutes ago, but they like each other already because they can sense the common bond. So I have today two guests that are both business leaders and church leaders. They're both men of a certain age. They're not 33. They're not 73, 40s, maybe almost 50 years old. And they've had a number of years. Well, Travis is almost 50. Jeremy's almost 35.
We look the opposite of that. I look like he's the older one.
Going completely off of looks, I suppose.
So. Yeah. But Jeremy really is relatively young. Okay. So very quickly, very seriously, both of you are trained in business and in theology. You both have theological degrees and business training. And both of you came to positions of leadership in the church, and you are currently business leaders. Our goal is to talk about business in the church. I want you both to simply tell your story in a few words. What's the most important thing you did in the church? What are you doing now as a business leader? Just get your story out for a couple minutes for people. Jeremy, alphabetically, B beats V all day long. You're up first, buddy.
Yeah, you just resurrected an old childhood wound, Dan, where I always had to go first in every class.
All right, Travis, you're first.
Yeah, okay, this is going to go well. Well, I think you'd asked in the questions ahead of time to kind of recount the past 15 years. I'll give you the past 15 years, what that's looked like. And I am older than Jeremy. I've got to be older than Jeremy. I am 50. I'm actually out of my 40s now, so much older than Jeremy. But past 15 years, you know, have included work both within the church, as in being on the payroll of a local church, and work outside of the local church. About 14 years ago, while serving as a full-time consultant, I had started my own consulting practice back in the mid-2000s. I had started working on my PhD, doing some PhD work, I should say, because I never completed it, at a Lutheran seminary in Indiana. After getting about a one-third of the way into that program, I pushed pause in 2010, and as of 2022, I've not yet returned to doctoral studies. I thought at one point I might have more of an academic track. God seemed pleased to have other plans for my life, our lives. I served for several years on staff at a very large PCA, Presbyterian Church in America, church in the Atlanta area. I was also ordained there as an elder, and that's where my wife and I, we worship there to this day. I was originally ordained, licensed and ordained outside of the PCA, but that's for another podcast. So been at this very large church, PCA church, for many years now. For the past 5 years, I've served as the executive director for a 501c3 nonprofit organization in Atlanta. This is an organization that our congregation actually helped to launch almost two decades ago. And then I also co-own, you've already made reference to business, I also co-own a small business with my wife. We did a bit of rebranding, formed a DBA in 2020 during the pandemic, just had a number of clients that were increasing. So we said, why don't we change things up a little bit? And most of the work with that business involves consulting, coaching in both the for-profit and nonprofit spaces, mostly around best practices in different industries, strategic planning, organizational change, cultural change, executing on the mission of the organization, and really paying a lot of attention to the overall health of the leader. So I share time between the nonprofit today and my business. And much of our business is by word of mouth, so that allows me to balance the two entities. So I give fractional leadership to both. Two other quick things. I also partner with a group called Core Media Source to do a podcast. We launched in 2021. We're currently in the process of recording season two. Lots of fun. And Core Media, they have studios in Atlanta and Nashville, so we use both of those. And then one other thing, I do teach a course on productivity and learning in organizations at a seminary in Atlanta. And I've had the opportunity to teach as a visiting instructor or a guest speaker in a couple of different graduate schools over the past 15 years.
Sound like a man of parts, as one of my professors used to say. It's an old way to say a man who does many things, and I have a hunch that you do them well. Travis, thank you for your self-introduction. Jeremy, tell us the highlights of your service to the church and the highlights of your business work.
Yeah, first of all, I guess I wanted to ask Travis how he figured out how to clone himself like four times with all the things you're accomplishing. So good job with that.
Thanks, man. I would guess you're doing the same thing, but I'll wait.
Yeah, I have to work hard to, I'm very sort of ADD. I have to work hard to try to stay as focused as a person like me can, but that's part of my story, I guess, as Dan asked me to introduce myself. I grew up in rural South Carolina and in a family of no one ever gone to college or anything like that. So, but my dad started his own small business when I was just a little kid. And I have always had multiple interests. I've always been interested in business and leadership in nonprofit and in church ministry. So when I was 9 or 10 years old, my dad asked me to start doing his books for him. And I started doing the books, and I think I was 10 and I was trying to suggest tax strategies and weird stuff like that. And,
I did books for a tire company when I was 12. I'm not kidding you. So Jeremy, I've known you for 20 years and I never knew we both did books before we hit puberty. Go ahead.
So glad we did this. I can't wait to, you know, offline and hear, you know, what our common learnings were from that. Yeah. So I had that. And then I got involved. At first, my parents didn't go to church. And then through a series of events, I would go with my grandmother. And then I felt like I want to go to church. So I started doing that like maybe 8 or 9 years old. And it was a church where, like, sort of end times, you know, Hal Lindsey kind of late great Planet Earth and Thief in the Night, all that kind of stuff was big, and it freaked me out. And so, like, on the one hand, I'm, you know, like doing the books for my dad. On the other hand, I'm freaked out about, you know, nuclear war with Russia. And I just decided, I think I was maybe 12 at this point, I was like, you know what? Somebody really just needs to study the book of Revelation. And I wouldn't have called it a commentary, but I'm going to study it and figure this thing out for everybody. That's the level of arrogance I had. I even know there were commentaries or whatever, that didn't go very far, but I had these multiple interests, and, you know, that kind of continued on all the way through my entire career. I graduated college and came straight to St. Louis and seminary. Actually, my visit, first time ever in St. Louis to Covenant, I got to sit on Dan in one of your classes. I think I've told you this before, and hearing you teach Hebrews, and then you had a conversation, maybe a lunch with us afterward. That was one of the compelling reasons I came. I was like, this is what I need, this type of education and learning and environment and community. Through seminary, I actually started working at Bank of America. I got involved in banking and finance, moved into management, after graduation, and eventually received a call to ministry there in St. Louis. A great church called Green Tree Community Church, was associate pastor there for about 7 years, then moved over to a church in St. Louis called The Journey, eventually became senior pastor of that church.
And let me just quickly add, that's a very large, very complicated church.
Yeah, to say.
That was a tough call, and we may come back to that, but. Anyway, Green Tree is a large-ish and not complicated church, relatively speaking, as larger churches go.
Well, I think all churches are complicated in some ways.
Yeah, yeah, but less complicated than The Journey.
Certainly. Yeah, it was, you know, 6 different locations, and and that involved like city, county, suburbs, and rural location. Like, so it's a very complex history and mix and all that kind of stuff. And that was. That was also a time where leadership and a business side of things became very, very, you know, needed, because you needed infrastructure and organizational structure, and you had, you know, financing, and you needed to do projections and all these kinds of things. So that was really a big part of my ministry there as well. And After that, I built my own business, doing a lot of leadership work, coaching, consulting, and I actually was my dream job. And then one of my best clients that I love so much, you know, kept after me until I ended up coming over here. I guess we'll get into this, but a company called Empower Me Wellness became president, COO, and I've been there. Just had my year anniversary, actually.
Yeah. So for the sake of our listeners, what we hear is two men who've been called to business and they've been called to the church, both. And they're now in business, although they still love Jesus. They still serve in their churches. They're still kingdom active people. So I want to get right away to my question, my big question. And I don't know how I want to say this exactly, but I'll say one more thing just to make it absolutely clear to listeners. Neither of these men left their church ministry because they were fired or incompetent or their faith was wavering. They were called to something else. And they're, you know, they're whole and they're happy men. They're smiling at me as I say this about them and so forth. So I'm going to start hot. Business folk tell people, pastors, and I've been a pastor 16 years and a professor. I think at last count, 473 years I've been a pastor and 473 years a professor and 16 years a pastor. And business people walk up to people like me and they say, you know, the church needs to be run more like a business. And I actually disagree with them less than many people do. A lot of pastors are irritated by that. It chafes them. They think the businessman doesn't know theology. What is he doing rolling in here telling me to run the church like a business? The whole idea of the church is we give, you know, Jesus gave himself freely. We don't charge people. It's all about giving and grace and generosity. We do not need to run more like a business. We need to get rid of people who tell us to run more like a business. But you're both ordained men and in business. What do you think of this idea that churches need to be run more like a business?
I think we could probably do, you know, an entire podcast series on this sort of question. This is such a huge question. I think I'd probably answer it by saying that, you know, whether you work in a church, if you're on the payroll of a church, or if you work in a business, both are going to be contexts where you have people that are made in the image of God. And because we're made in the image of God, you've got, you know, people are going to bring aspects of that image into whatever arena, whatever context they find themselves in. You know, and I think about a business, it's full of image bearers. They're trying to make sense of how they're going to go about creating a product or creating a service. You know, and when I say place, I mean, that could be virtual, that could be brick and mortar, that could be a sole proprietorship, or it could be, you know, a huge corporation. But you're still talking about ways that people try to rally around a mission, ways that people are trying to get others organized toward particular objectives and goals. You're trying to leverage your experience, your expertise in a way that helps the business or the company to be sustainable and successful. You've got similar things that are going on in the church. And yes, I get that they are in two different domains, two different arenas, but you still have, and even in a local church, you've got a shared mission. You've got a way to go about pursuing that shared mission, whether you're large, you know, maybe a more sophisticated or complex church, or a church that even meets in a home. You've still got to use your gifts and your experience to help the church community pursue God's glory, to demonstrate God's love in a way that's helpful for the church and the community around the church. So, you know, both the business and the church, they both require shared goals, distribution of labor, organizational design, shared learning. There's a number of other things that are transferable to both arenas, even if you're serving in a very small church. But I do get it. I do get why church leaders may resent maybe a business leader telling them that the church could or should be run like a business. I mean, businesses, they're human organizations trying to produce services and products and generate a profit so that they can stay in business. And just like in the church, you've got businesses, they have creative image bearers that are working hard to do good work.
But not for profit, right?
Right, so right. But you're still trying to make sense of your context.
Yeah, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I just want to bring the obvious into the account that we measure success differently. Not that we're indifferent.
Yeah, hopefully
to measuring
they're not
success.
Working for a profit. Exactly.
Right. I will say that we confuse sometimes. Nonprofit doesn't mean no profit. Right. It means not for profit.
Right. Right. Yeah, I was going to say you've got
you know, you have brokenness because we live in a sinful world. You know, we live in a world that's marred by sin. So, you know, and that's kind of the lens that we see things through. So, you know, there are principles that probably can be helpful in both arenas, church and business, but we're probably a little bit skewed with how we think of different domains because of sin. But Jeremy, go ahead. Dive in, man.
You make a lot of good points. And I think I like to start with that, with a little bit of the heart of the pastor who's being told that, right? A gospel response to that would be something that would begin with like curiosity with, tell me what you mean by that in a sincere way. Because, you know, what I find is that often we confuse facts, things that are happening in the story we tell ourselves about them. So somebody tells us, hey, the church should really be run more like this or that. And all of a sudden we are telling ourselves a story of like, they think I'm incompetent. They don't think I know what I'm doing. They want to bring like the world into the church and things like that. And I want to say, what can I learn from this person regardless? And what do you mean by that? Because we have these terms like run like a business. Well, what kind of a business and what do you mean? Do you mean financially, organizationally, structurally, technical expertise? Like which things do you mean? But I think a lot of times pastors are used to being the expert in the room, right? They've studied the Bible and theology and Greek and Hebrew, and almost no one else is in their whole church is an expert like them in that. And then there's this other side where someone's saying, but we have to do some of these things. And in some ways it's kind of like, it can kind of be a threat to that. And also I find a lot of business people are really, they're looking not to corporatize necessarily the church as much as actually to deploy their own gifts, where they feel like, I don't know how to use my set of gifts, whether entrepreneurial or financial or strategic. I don't really know how to use my set of gifts for the kingdom or for this to serve this church. And in a lot of ways, I think a lot of times they're asking that question and you have the chance to invite them in to a conversation or a process that we miss out on when we don't do that.
Yeah. So let me agree with both of you that the first time I heard it, I was probably young and insecure. And, you know, the most prominent businessman in the church told me that. And he was a very fiery kind of guy. I mean, he liked me and I liked him, but, you know, I was a little bit on my heels, shall we say. Over the years, I came to embrace the idea that church should be run with more business-like sensibilities. So actually, the way I learned the most about churches is not so much through my two times being a pastor, but through the 7 or 8 or 9, depending how you count, times I've been an interim and, you know, preached and sometimes done more than preaching at a church. And more than once, I've walked into a church that was desperately behind financially and had no idea how to even talk about it, except to say, I guess we'll have to cut staff. And you know, you're both business leaders. I'm guessing you're thinking that's not the best way to set things right, is just start cutting staff and put people behind. And then at a very simple level, also this communication, you know, you say, well, we told everybody that we're behind on the budget. How did you do that? Well, we sent it out in the weekly email blast. And what's the open rate on that? Okay, it's 44%. That's pretty good. And how many people read to the end of the email? We have no idea. So what you're telling me is that you have no idea how many of the 44% read one thing about the budget. So, you know, business people could help you with that, right? So that's my view. I want to say, I want to embrace those who say we need wisdom in the economic, external aspect of kingdom work.
How do we love and serve other people, right? Especially with scale or size, you need systems and processes to do that, to communicate wherever those things come, whether through technology or other things already in process. I mean, I think most pastors should be alleviated of like, oh, you mean I don't have to try to do budget projections? I can get some help with that, or things like that should be sort of part of like the gifts of the body, you know, coming together. And I think there's just a real, you know, opportunity in that we want to also be protective, but also utilize. You know, I was thinking the other day that I heard somebody say, I don't know why, but quote from one of the Federalist Papers where James Madison said, what is government but a reflection upon human nature? And you know, what is leadership but a reflection upon human nature, where we know that we are neither angels nor demons, right? Like we are made in God's image and have all of that glory and potential, and we're also broken. And so setting up ways in which acknowledging the human nature that we have and being able to draw the most potential and also protect and put guardrails against the worst abuses or any abuse.
Travis.
There's something that we did, which was, it was a great exercise we did as a congregation, I don't know, about 7 or 8 years ago. I was on staff at the church where we still attend to this day. I partnered with a gentleman who, very successful businessman. We decided to team together to basically, we called it Gospel at Work Day. I think that's what we called it, where we matched people in business with, and our church is kind of a large church. And so we have a lot of teaching elders that are on staff and other staff that work for the church. And we paired the business person, and they weren't necessarily an owner or a founder or CEO. They may have been downline a bit. And we teamed them up with somebody on staff, and the two came together and kind of studied each other's contexts a little bit. And the person on staff spent some time on staff at the church, spent some time in the business with the business person. And I think we had some people in healthcare and education as well. It wasn't all just business. And the pairs, and we had a number, we had like maybe 15 or more. I don't remember the exact number, 15 or more pairings that we did. They came out of that experience having a greater appreciation for each other's domains. And they also had to work on a project together that they came to agree upon together. And I think most of those projects involved the person in, whether it was education or business or healthcare, having the pastor or the staff person work with them on a project. Maybe a couple occasions it was vice versa. That was an incredibly helpful project. We did two iterations of that. We actually applied for a grant to be able to do that. There were a ton of learnings that came out of that. But as we were talking, and I was just thinking how good it is to be exposed to different domains, because sometimes we have no idea what the other is doing. And there's so much we could be learning from a business leader within the church. Right.
After the break, Travis and Jeremy will explain how their faith and their theology shape their business leadership.
The Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals is a coalition of believers who hold the historic creeds and confessions of the Reformed faith and proclaim biblical doctrine in order to foster a Reformed awakening in today's church. What all that means is we care about the church, we care about truth, and work hard to preserve and advance it every day. Connect with our broadcast, podcast, publishing, internet, and event platforms at workingwithdan.org. Thank you for your prayerful and financial support of the Alliance.
We want church leaders to learn from business leaders. We've agreed on that. And not be defensive and assume they have a fresh perspective and they can teach us about systems and about budgeting that will enhance the ministry. How do business leaders need to learn? Where do business leaders need to learn from pastors? What can, Travis, picking up your comment, it's easy for me to imagine how a pastor can learn about systems and budgets from a business leader. What do business leaders need to learn from pastors, theologians?
I think there's so many. We're experiencing just rapid growth. We're hiring 100 people a month. We're opening 200 positions a month. When you're doing that, it's easy to lose track of the mission, the impact, or the people. And so I view a lot of leadership with the biblical model of shepherding, like shepherding a company, shepherding people. And I do these, meetings with my teams or calls with our 100 new people that we just hired. And I tell them every time that I want them to, whenever they leave the company, where they retire or whatever, like I want them to say, I'm a better person and a better leader because I worked at Empower Me Wellness. We're a for-profit company. We have to make, money at some point. We have investors. We have, to fund growth, all that kind of stuff. But I'm here because of the mission, because I believe we have the chance to transform the way healthcare is done in senior living organizations. And that's the thing that gets me up and drives me in the morning. And so I think that missional aspect and the idea that the world, the human nature, what the gospel teaches us is not just incentives and financial rewards and things like that. People don't operate just on those things. They want to be called to a purpose. They want to be called to something greater. They want to know that someone's investing in them. They want to know that this company is not here to, raid and control your life, that they're here to like help you move toward human flourishing and thriving. And so I look at it like One, that call to redeem or transform. Dan and I talk about this. I think Dan came up with this. Very few people are going to change the world, but we all have the chance to change our corner of the world. And so I think those kinds of things and understanding people as holistic people, that's what the gospel teaches us. And so we want to treat people in that way and call them to that kind of purpose. So I don't know, there's a lot of thoughts in there, but some of those are sort of like the shepherding aspect, the missional aspect, the anthropology of, we have a whole person here. You're not just a robot or some product of whatever.
Yeah. This is such a large question. So I kind of want to walk maybe methodically through this just a little bit, because, you've got people in the business world. I mean, who they're part of the local church. I think there's this huge responsibility on the shoulders of a pastor or a pastoral team. And maybe particularly among those who are gifted in teaching, the burden of equipping the saints for the work of the ministry. We see this in Ephesians 4. I might define ministry a bit more broadly than, just vocational ministry or ministry in the context of the church. Maybe we could talk about that later. Part of that equipping means that people, that the business leader or the teacher or the plumber or whoever, they need to be equipped with, how do I love God in and through my work? How do I love my neighbor? How do I bless my neighbor in every arena of life, every calling, all of life being lived before God? So that, this means that leaders, and particularly teachers, those who equip in the church, they should have at least some idea, I think, of the daily grind that's faced by those who are not engaged in full-time vocational pastoral ministry. In every arena, particularly in business. So there's this learning that needs to take place. And so to your question, I mean the business world, learning from the church and the gospel, but the teaching needs to be done in an informed way. And that's very hard work. This means, there needs to be exposure to business or whatever domain of work the people in that church give a huge chunk of their lives to. I know in our congregation, most of the people we've surveyed our folks in the past, and we know that there's three particular domains in our church where most of our people tend to work. And the primary one is business, but we also have a lot of folks working in healthcare, in education. And so we just got to be cognizant of that. But this, this is part of the work of church leadership so that they can be better equipped to equip those that they serve. The business world would do well to learn where it fits within God's grand narrative, big picture, creation, fall, redemption, restoration. I think that the idea of business, that was embedded in the creation story where God creates people to bear his image, to do all kinds of creative things.
He put valuable metals in the earth,
yes,
gold
did.
And onyx. And I think that's the Bible's way of saying from the very beginning, hey, I put resources in the world. You're supposed to develop them.
Yeah, absolutely.
We notice that, the trees and garden, we know we're supposed to tend the garden, but we're also supposed to take care of rocks.
Yeah, sometimes we look at it as if Adam and Eve, if the fall didn't occur, then they would have just lounged in the garden and, done nothing the rest of their lives. And that's a really more of a Marxist kind of view. And this idea that that's what man was made for. No, they were going to be sent out to develop all the natural creation that God had done and live his image with their creativity, with their love and service and those kinds of things. And I think, the new creation similarly it has that same element to it, right? Yeah. Like all the kings of the earth bring their glory in, and people make fun of the cloud and the harp and that kind of stuff. It's like, there's going to be work to do and transformation, what wonderful kinds of things,
Yeah. Not frustrating work. You can look at the design of the human body, like the hands and the shoulders and the mind. God made us so we could develop these riches he put in the world. So we jumped in because we couldn't stand it anymore, Travis. We were just so interested in what you're saying. Do you want to finish? But we did interrupt. Do you want to say a little bit about?
Yeah, maybe a couple more things, Just understanding what it means to be an image bearer or a worker or a founder, an owner, all of that comes right out of scripture. The gospel helps the business world, helps the business person know who they're accountable to. Gospel informs the business world regarding what's right, what's not right, what needs to be changed and how business should actually be conducted, what products or services are actually helpful. mm-hmm. What may not be helpful for communities. Right. You know, that's such a huge challenge. And I'll just plug, it's an older book now, although older, relatively speaking, but a really helpful book, probably needs to be updated. It's about 12 years old, that I read, what I found super helpful in maybe 2010, was Dr. Jeff Van Duzer's book, Why Business Matters to God. Mm-hmm. Incredibly helpful resource. I may reference that in something else here in a minute, but an owner in particular would do well to pick up that book. So helpful.
Yeah. Let me just underscore two things that you said, Travis. One, I heard you say implicitly, Christian leaders should interview and listen carefully to the people in their church, especially the people who are in the professions that are most commonly represented in the church. And you also said that jobs should be appraised for their excellence and their profitability to humanity, not just financial profitability. And there are jobs that shouldn't be done. I'm just going to stick one more thing in and let you bounce off this. You know, God actually gives himself a lot of titles for jobs. He's a king. He's a warrior. He's a potter. He's a shepherd. He's a farmer. He's an architect and he's a builder. He's a weaver. There's many more. God is a worker. And we could say compares himself to people who are active in the economic and governmental or leadership realm. I'm gonna slightly shift here and ask you to cover the same ground through a statement that our dear friend Abraham Kuyper made. You know, he's the sphere sovereignty guy, meaning you have to know what sphere you're in and then have expertise and reflection on the character of that sphere and govern the sphere accordingly. And so what we're saying is there's a lot of overlap, and Kuyper knew this, there's a lot of interpenetration. All spheres have many things in common, and yet they're also different. So, you know, you don't run a poetry club the way you want to run a manufacturing of car parts enterprise, and you don't run a hiking club the way you run a movie studio. And yet people are involved in all of them, and they have a cause and they have a mission. Let me just ask you to comment again. What's the biggest difference between the mission? We've been kind of hitting the similarities. What's the biggest difference between the mission of the church and the mission of economic enterprises? What would you say?
There was a quote that I wanted to, I referenced Jeff Van Duzer's book, mm-hmm. and there's a quote out of that book, which I thought is so helpful. You know, he probably says kind of a mission statement for business better than anything that I've read or heard before. And he phrases it sort of this way, and I may be paraphrasing a bit. I did capture the quote, but he says, instead of business or the business person starting with the question, what will maximize the return on our shareholders' investment? What if a person in business first asks instead, quote, given the core competencies of my organization and the assets under its control, how can I best direct the organization to serve? In other words, which products or services could we produce that would best enable my community to flourish? I think that question, it's greatly informed by scripture. And the church needs to be about that. You know, is that the mission statement of the church? You know, I think you'd have to rephrase the question a little bit, but you know, he's saying people are not just tools to be used, you know, to produce whatever and however, but are instead image bearers and should be treated with dignity and respect in every sense. But the church in a community, what's our mission statement? What are we called? What's our vision? It's to glorify God and enjoy him forever, to love our neighbor as we love ourselves. That's not divorced from business. It doesn't have to be so binary.
Right.
And so, you know, I think the church in the community needs to be saying kind of some of the same things. How can we as a church equip the saints for the work of the ministry so that they can contribute their gifts, their skills to be able to bless and serve, their community
in their place and time, which is not yep. identical other places and time. Jeremy, I want you to comment on this, but I'm going to stir the pot just a tiny bit and say the Van Duzer quotation works better for privately held firms than publicly held firms. The biggest thing I've learned in interviewing business leaders, and I've interviewed a lot of them, is that if you own your own company or it's a family company, you have enormous level of freedom to say, we're making enough money, we're making plenty of money, and maximizing profit is not something we're mandated to do. If you're on one of the big exchanges and you're not maximizing your profit, you're looking for a new job in many occasions. So let me just add that to the mix. Jeremy, what do you want to say?
Yeah. And we're, you know, because we're sort of, you know, a hybrid. We, our founder is an owner. We, our executive team members have some ownership, and we have investors and firms and who have invested in us. We just, you know, kind of made a lot of news with Jim McKelvey, the founder of Square, is our latest investor. And so we have, you know, we're not publicly traded. And so but we have multiple things like that. And what we try to do is really think about one of our core values is alignment. How can we align and we would only take on investors that would fit this, our investors, our employees' interests, our residents and patients, our operators in the senior living space. If we can align all those interests, and I think sometimes we have this idea of like like caring for people and caring about profits are these opposite things. You know, I think Herb Keller proved this at Southwest. He said, like, we take care of our people. They will take care of the customer and take care of the rest. And one thing I say to my teams all the time is if we add more value to our employees, our seniors, our operators, we add more value to their lives and to their than anyone else is adding, then all these other things will take care of themselves. Actually, you know, you find in studies that paying attention to people and culture, things like that, actually maximize profit over the midterm and the long term. And so, you know, to me, it's like ultimately the mission is kind of the same, right? In the sense of the glory of God and the flourishing of human beings. How we apply that in the church mainly is in ministry of word and sacrament, right? And in business, the focus and the application is much different. But I think there's this sort of dichotomy that gets created where it says, like, we could either care about people or we could care about profits. And I find that the more you care about people, and then the more, you know, processes and structures you put in place, like processes save us from the poverty of our intentions. And so having those kinds of things going is a way to love and care for people and lead to that kind of flourishing. And then generally when people feel cared for, they have a mission, their morale is higher, they perform, they're more engaged, and they take care of whoever your customer is, and profits tend to follow that. Profits are a lagging indicator of how much value you're adding to a person or a community or a market. And we need to focus on adding the value and taking it first, and then those things follow.
So I'm going to label three things I heard. Number one, we can't worry. And I see Travis nodding his head. We need to stop worrying so much about short-term profitability and look to midterm and long-term. That's what we would say to maybe an investor who demands a return right now. Number one. Number two, and I've heard you say this before, just for the record, Jeremy and I have actually worked together as consultants for Christian business leaders and tried to help them fulfill their mission. And you have emphasized, Jeremy, that if you attend to the process, the results tend to follow more or less automatically. So use a sports analogy, if you say, come on, let's go win the game, that might fire you up for 5 or 10 minutes. But if you haven't actually learned how to hit the ball, throw the ball, catch the ball, and work together as a team, hit the cutoff man, you know, throw a good outlet pass to mix sports up a little bit. If you don't actually know how to play, it doesn't matter how enthusiastic you are. And it actually doesn't even matter how talented you are most of the time. So the process, take care of the process, results take care of themselves. I heard you saying that. There's something else I heard you say, but I don't know. Those are the two I care about the most.
Yeah, and I don't want to be oversimplistic, but I do want to like kind of break up the dichotomy that I think a lot of people have sometimes.
Yeah, right. Travis?
No, I thought it was very good, Jeremy, what you had to say. You know, now that I'm getting to know you just a little bit during this call, I want to have some other conversations with you. This is very good, very helpful. You know, going back to an original question that you had, you started talking about Abraham Kuyper. Dan, this is your question, mm-hmm. Different domains, fear, sovereignty, that sort of thing. I think you were asking about, you know, the economic aspects of the church. And did you ask that? Or maybe I'm thinking this.
No, I am asking it. Yeah. Well, I know that you're both educated men, so I wasn't spelling it out completely. So I would say it's something like this. The church does have to have a balanced budget more or less eventually.
Yeah.
Or it's going to impinge upon its ability to serve. I mean, if you have to, you know, usually have a building and lights and you have to have a staff and so forth. So to accomplish your mission, now you're mostly training volunteers, but there are economic factors if you exist in the external world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But economic factors matter more on some occasions than others. And so if you're manufacturing cars or putting out movies, you have to constantly ask who wants to buy what, yeah, and how much does it cost, and what's each unit, and how are we going to take care of the infrastructure? If you're running a hiking club, you know, you have to have maybe some minimal dues and some rules so, you know, you don't wander off into, you know, a bog or you know, accidentally cross the border from Croatia to Bosnia and have somebody shoot at you. You know, you have to have rules in place, but there are far fewer rules. And they're much softer. It's like, be a good fellow hiker. And if somebody's falling behind, be kind to them, which actually lines up with business to some degree. But yeah, there are fewer laws and there are different laws. Even though all organizations have laws, you have to match the laws to the genius of your organization.
Yeah, this could almost be a couple of different conversations, but because I think the topic is incredibly interesting. You know, I'm thinking, and this may be overly simplistic, you know, I'm thinking that in the church you need people in the church helping it to function in a healthy way so that it can do what it's supposed to be doing within its domain. You need personnel, you know, whether they're paid or unpaid, to contribute their talents, their gifts, their experiences in ways that, you know, the church can operate as she should be, responsibly, with good accounting practices, helpful performance reviews, good feedback loops. Again, this is paid or unpaid volunteers, good stewardship. You know, if you're a church with a building or a leased space, and not every church has a building, not every church is leasing space, you know, you need help from people who know a thing or two about facilities, leasing, maintenance. So you don't run a church like you would maybe a hiking club or some other things, but there are organizational tasks that have to be done regardless of the arena, regardless of the domain. So part of the challenge is figuring out, you know, where are people gifted? And some of those folks come out of the business world to help create a structure that can leverage their gifts, leverage their talents in a way that's actually really helpful. That's what I wanted to say about that. But go for it, Jeremy. You add.
Oh, I got to say one more thing to label what Jeremy said last time. And I knew I wanted to label it and you can comment on it. So Jeremy, again, you and I have worked on some things together. What we noticed when we talked to business leaders, when you were a consultant and I was, we had some kind of a partnership for a while, is that the companies that do the best are the ones that have a mission that matters. And they also make it very clear that people matter. There's an interest in devoting ourselves to a product that we actually believe is good. And, you know, we want to do things that make it clear that we respect you, including things like one organization we worked with that would give scholarships to people who wanted to do something totally different. If they were, I don't know, there was a sort of a system where you could, you know, get educated to leave the company. And that was, I thought, enormously positive for the company and built loyalty and showed caring. So Jeremy, go ahead. You want to comment on that or whatever else you want to say?
Yeah. One of the things coming to mind is again, this, you were just mentioning the mission, and I'll just give you a very practical example. I mean, our mission is the relentless drive to improve the lives of seniors. And, you know, everybody's got a mission statement. It's on a board somewhere. I work with lots of companies. Some it's just a statement somewhere, some pretty really doing it. I feel like our company is maybe the most mission centered company that I've ever been a part of or worked with. And the way that works out is actually, people say, how do we think of this innovation that we're rolling out right now? How did you think of this idea? How did this integration happen? And it wasn't because we're smarter than anybody else or we have like great, you know, brainstorming sessions. It's because we were committed to the mission, and most companies fall in love with their product or their service. We're called to fall in love with our customer. And when you fall in love with the customer, the mission, right, was not for us to be a little bit better X company than someone else. Our mission was to improve the lives of seniors. And because we've been so in love with that mission, we listen to them and listen to other needs that they had in those communities and our operators. And suddenly, like, ideas came from everywhere, right? Because we were going, how do we improve their lives? Not how do we, you know, out muscle the competition or make it just, you know, a tweak hair better of this one line. And I think those kinds of things are innovation and execution and value creators for your people and for those markets and the people you serve.
Well, I just want to say, I think every pastor needs to hear that. I preach most weeks, and it is very easy for me to get in love with what I want to say. And I have to ask the question, not is what I want to say interesting or true or well-stated or, you know, funny or well as, you know, whatever, exegetically sound, but does it actually help the people there? And listen to the customer. Obviously, you know, it's offensive to some people to say, well, Pat, the church members are not customers, but they're your people whose lives you want to make better. So that's...
Yeah, translate it to sheep. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's easy for the pastor, right, to fall in love with their style of music or worship, or their, like, the way they, the questions they come to the text with, right? What questions are your people coming to the text with? And you'll be surprised, right? Just like when you ask different questions of a person or a text or anything like that, you know, how would this person think about it? How, what do they need to hear here? Suddenly your outward mindset, you're focused on, you know, where Jesus says, like, the sheep are harassed and helpless. They need a shepherd, and that compassion is really other centered. And I think those two things cross over that I was just, you know, mentioning.
Travis.
No, I think this is all very good. And it's interesting. This is where I'm listening to some of the language. I think those within church leadership that start hearing in some settings, hey, we need to really consider what the customer is wanting, or what we think we're hearing the customer need. That's where all of a sudden some of this, you know, the pastors tend to get scared, like, oh my goodness, you know, we're turning the church into a business. And are we just going to appeal to what our customers in the pews want? Are we just creating consumers? And I get the concern that's there. But yeah, this podcast, I mean, this could be a series. We could talk about this for a long time.
Well, maybe we'll have another run at it. But so here's when I get pastors who say, oh, Dan, you're spending too much time answering the questions people are asking. My comment is, how do you know their questions are bad? Maybe they're asking really good questions. And, you know, we don't want to pander to people's felt needs unless their felt needs are actually real needs. Not every felt need is a real need, but many felt needs are. Jesus conducted his ministry. People said, Jesus, son of David, why are you crying out to me? Well, I want to receive my sight. He goes, okay, that's a good one. I'll give it to you. That was a felt need. I'm blind. I want to see. Jesus goes, excellent. Centurion, my servant is lying home terribly ill. You know, can you help? Yes, I can. I'll come to your house. Oh, you don't need to. Just say the word. And then on it goes. But Jesus recognized that his felt need was a real and valid need, which he could solve. And then, you know, those are miracles, of course, but there's many other instances.
Yeah, totally. But just even a little more digging kind of tends to lead you to some of the right, like, even if someone is asking the question, how can I justify unethical behavior, you know, from the Bible, mm-hmm. right? Well, that's a great question to address in a sermon, like, because naturally human beings are trying to find reasons to justify whatever it is we believe or whatever it is we do. And so how do you help someone engage that and do it? So even like a sinful question, right, can mm-hmm. lead you to a new way to look at how to address it or that kind of thing. And so that is, I don't think we have to be afraid of it or like that it's going to somehow like, you know, pollute what we're trying to do.
Have either of you seen a church survey its people and ask them, what are some of the major business decisions or business challenges that you're facing right now? Just asking the question and getting feedback from people, you know, their congregants, and then actually answering that in some way from the front on a Sunday.
That's so obvious and so obviously never been done in my experience that it's just making me laugh. Of course we should do it. And I can't even imagine that it's done in more than one church out of 1,000. I don't know.
And I wasn't asking rhetorically. I was literally, yeah. I was just trying to think, you know, why, yeah, maybe
yeah.
I'm too much.
See, I've got I'm an interim pastor right now, so I can do it. And I think I want to do that. And that'll align very well with my interest in faith and work. The other thing, of course, is when people, Jeremy, you're saying this in a way, when people ask bad questions, they're still getting at important issues. How can I be dishonest and still feel good about myself? Well, it's a terrible question, but it's an important issue. And that is, why do I feel bad when I do things that are dishonest? Why am I asking my pastor this question? And obviously, because there's a lot of dissonance. So you can say, hey, you're raising an issue that's extremely important. And let's rephrase that a little bit, right? All right, I'm going to go rapid fire. I know that you guys are ready to give some rapid fire answers. You ready? One reason you're thankful you have a theological education as you live in business right now.
Yeah, I'll be real quick. I'm super thankful to have a theological education, which I, by the way, happened to get my master's from Covenant Theological Seminary. It was at Covenant where I was able to frame some things in culture that maybe I had not been able to do beforehand. So it was my theological degree, my theological training that actually set me up to be able to get into business in the first place, which I launched after I graduated from seminary.
Jeremy.
I'm extremely glad. I could give you a million reasons. I'll give you one, which is the fact that you're able to plumb the depths of what human nature is like. So that anthropology and try doing anything in business or in a market when you don't understand how humans function, what human nature is, and you will find yourself in failure because and that sense of knowing or understanding, you know, like the human heart, the good, the bad, and the ugly, to lead people and to enter markets and things like that is primary.
I think it's implicit, last question, in both of you that you enjoyed ministry, but you're also glad you made the switch to business, at least for now. You might go back someday, maybe not, maybe so. If you're glad you made the switch, give us one reason why you're delighted and you sense God's joy in your work in business today.
The dichotomy isn't that strong to me. I am glad I made the switch, but not because I have any, you know, animosity or big comparison syndromes or anything like that, but just the, it tends to fit, I think, my particular calling and who I am right now in terms of being able to express kind of all the things that we just said, sort of a missional mindset, a care for people, an impact in the world, and the business metrics, the KPIs, the investor relationships, things like that, that I really love as well. And so it kind of ties for me, at least, all those things together in a package like that.
Mm, thank you.
Let me answer it by saying this. This is where, and I referenced this earlier, but I think I would define ministry a bit more broadly than maybe a more narrow definition of the term. Again, I love the reference books. We've all learned something from someone. Nothing's new under the sun. There's this little book called Business for the Common Good. It was written by Ken Man Wong, Scott Ray. Great little book, particularly the first chapter. They write about ministry. They say to have a ministry simply means to be in service to God. You know, and they say the word ministry, you know, it comes from a Greek word that's simply translated service. That's the word that we get deacon from. And they go on to say, we all serve God full time, whether it's in the world, in the church, or on the mission field. There are simply different arenas of service and all have significant value to God. And I think personally, you know, I'm getting a better handle on the various callings, different arenas that God has put in front of me. I've been consulting for a long time now, different iterations of that, but I love the local church. I love small business. I wouldn't say it's been a switch so much as it's been a shift. I've just shifted my focus because I see a future where there's both service in the local church, through the local church, and service in business. So I'm just glad that I've had the opportunity to add some things to my repertoire. I'd say it more that way than making a complete switch.
That's great. Brothers, it's been really a pleasure to have you both here. You've given our listeners a lot to think about. I love the joy that you both have in the Lord and his gospel and the world of business. And I pray that more and more of our listeners can have that same kind of sense of deep satisfaction in the work that they do. Thanks for sharing your story with us and your insights.
We're thankful for today's guest and also extend special thanks to our sponsor, the Alliance for Confessing Evangelicals. Please check out their site, Reformation 21. That's the principal host of this podcast. If you want to put your faith to work and change your corner of the world, visit our website, the Center for Faith and Work St. Louis. Look for faithandworkstl.org. That's one word, We'll help you start a cohort with like-minded believers who also want to practice their faith at work. This podcast is donor-supported. To keep us going, please donate on our website. Maybe more importantly, you can support us by listening, by subscribing, by sharing, by liking us, by posting us on your favorite platform, or go old school and tell a friend.